Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered. It's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
So you want to start a business. You might think you need a team of people and fancy tech skills, but you don't. You just need GoDaddy Aero. I'm Walton Goggins, and as an actor, I'm an expert in looking like I know what I'm doing, even when I don't. And I like the sound of starting my own business, Walton Goggins Goggle Glasses. But I'm an actor. I don't know what I'm doing. I needed help. GoDaddy Aero uses AI to create everything you need to grow a business. It'll make you a unique logo. It'll create a custom website. It'll write social posts for you and even set you up with a social media calendar. I didn't even realize I needed a social media calendar. GoDaddy Aero will take your idea that sounds good and make a business that looks like you know what you're doing. GoDaddy Aero can get your business up and running in minutes. You know what that sounds like? It sounds like a plan. Get started at GoDaddy.com/Aero. That's GoDaddy.com/AIRO.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with somebody that you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One on One.
You know, it was first class. The Stars were a first class organization, as well run as any of them. And we had three really, really successful years. So it was here again. How lucky am I? Three more years in the USFL and three more years of playoffs. Just every year in the NFL playoffs. So it was pretty lucky.
And our guest this week is former Eagles wide receiver, former Philadelphia Stars wide receiver, and Penn State star, Scott Fitzke. Scott, thanks so much for the time.
All right, thanks for having me.
So what are you doing these days?
Well, I own a commercial and industrial roofing business that I've had since the late 80s. So 30-some years I've been doing the same thing. And on the side, I coach high school football, and I've always, prior to that, coached a lot of, you know, kids' youth sports. And so I've always stayed involved. I have a couple kids that are athletes, and that's kept me pretty busy for the last 35 years.
So you are a Central Pennsylvania kid, Red Lion High School, correct?
Correct, yep. South Central Pennsylvania.
So growing up, was football always the top of your depth chart, or were you playing whatever was going on that season?
Well, back then, you know, life's different now. You know, we played football. Once football was over, all the football players played basketball, and then we either ran track or played baseball. So I was whatever season the sport was in, and I ran track, so I played basketball, football, and track, and then always played summertime baseball. So whatever season was in, that's the sport we played. But of course, football was always my number one love.
Why? What drew you to it?
Well, number one, we were really good in high school. My 3 years in junior high and my 3 years in varsity, we never lost a football game. So, when you have success, you know, it makes you pretty excited about it. And we had a lot of good players on our team, and we did really well. And I had a pretty nice career in high school. So that made it exciting. Our basketball, we were always okay because we always had football players playing against some basketball players. And, you know, basketball's a game and everybody, you know, we love basketball. But I knew I had an opportunity to maybe move forward playing football because of, you know, my high school career.
When did you start to get noticed by colleges?
I started actually my sophomore year. I hear this story a lot. My sophomore year, I went to a camp up in Lock Haven, PA, outside of Penn State, and Franny Ganner, who was back then a recruiting guy, offensive running back coach, he had seen me at a camp on Lock Haven and watched me run. You know, I was a state 100-yard dash champ as a senior. So he watched me run. And at that point, I was on their radar. So I knew back as a sophomore that, you know, there was potential. That didn't mean anything as a sophomore back then, but I knew that there was potential if I continued to grow and get better and that I would have the opportunity. And then my junior year, you know, I started hearing from a lot more schools and then my senior year obviously had an opportunity to make a lot of visits, and I got, you know, a good bit of offers from the major college schools.
But was Penn State always the leader in the clubhouse?
Penn State wasn't. It wasn't. I wasn't a big college football fan as a kid for some reason. I don't know why. But I think we were, you know, kind of into our own thing and never paid much attention to college. But I had five or six schools that I was really interested in. Took a trip to Texas Christian, what I really liked for some reason. You know, of course, the game I went to, TCU played. Here's a great story. TCU played Texas. TCU was 0-10 the year before. A guy named Schaffner was the coach. So they brought, you know, the guys in, recruited us. You know, we were met at the airport, you know, by a female, whatever, you know. And they lost 86-7 or something. I keep saying 92, but my son said, no, it wasn't 92. It was 80 something. So they lost, they got crushed, and, you know, we get in. And so it was pretty comical, but, you know, when it came down to finally make a decision, it was a pretty simple decision. I'm going to Penn State, and that's how it's going to be. So it just kind of one of those spur of the day things where, oh, I decided this is where I'm going.
So when you arrive at Penn State, is the transition – now, you talked about how successful your team was and you were in high school, but was it a big transition to the college game for you?
Well, it was. It was, but we caught on pretty quick because, you know, I played in the Big 33 game right before we went to – back then we played Ohio. And we played in the Big 33 game probably about 2 weeks or a week and a half – sometime in July – before we went up to State College, freshmen came in a little early. And I think I had 11 or 12 teammates that played in the Big 33 game. So I had a lot of friends right off the bat. And obviously it's a big transition. You know, you go to big time college football and, you know, it's like jumping from college to pro, you know, it's a big transition. And but we caught on, you know, we a lot of good people, a lot of people helping you out, a lot of, you know, you didn't go there and the seniors and juniors were, you know, here's a young freshman kid trying to take my job. It wasn't like that. You know, everybody's there to help. And the transition, quite honestly, even though it was hard, it was easy. It just kind of happened to flow. And everything, you know, that I can remember from, you know, I don't remember how long ago it was, but 40 some years ago, I remember only positive things about it.
So you go to Penn State, which, you know, fairly or unfairly under Joe Paterno was looked at as a conservative type offense. You're a fast wide receiver. Did you feel comfortable in the offense?
I did, because back at high school, I was a running back. We ran the old Delaware ring tee, so we ran the ball time. But I knew at 6 foot, you know, 185 pounds, I wasn't going to be a running back. So, you know, Chuck Fusina, who was our quarterback, you know, was a good buddy of mine. And, you know, we worked a lot together, and he ended up playing a lot as a freshman. But you know, it was what it was, you know, just the opportunity to go out and play. You know, we were very good blockers. You know, we had to block a lot. So we enjoyed blocking, trying to knock people down, you know, trying to, but on third downs, it was, you know, time to possibly catch the ball. The one story I have, which really we were playing Notre Dame in the Gator Bowl. And of course, like you said, third down was kind of when we threw the ball. You know, we weren't first day, you know, we didn't do a lot of play action. So we're playing Notre Dame, the Gator Bowl. And that's back when we were only throwing on third. I think Jimmy Cephalo was on the other side of me. And I was also the punter. I punted for 3 years at Penn State. So Joe started taking me out of the game on third down to rest. So I would be rested for punting. And, you know, that was like that was like my biggest disappointment at Penn State. I was pissed off. So that's a funny story. Took me out for a while. And of course I got with one of the other coaches and couldn't understand it all, but yeah, it was all good. But we were conservative. We were, you know, ran the ball up the middle, ran the ball. We had a lot of good running back, Matt Suey, Mike Goon, a lot of really good players, but you know, I was just thankful that I got the opportunity. You know, would have been nice to catch 100 a year, but you know, that wasn't going to happen.
So I'm curious, how do you think you would fare in today's college football game as a wide receiver?
It's hard to say. You know, those guys are such fantastic athletes, you know, and the training and, you know, just every single position, not just a wide receiver, but linemen. You know, you got these linemen running 4.6 and 4.7 and they're 350 pounds. And, it's hard to say. I would like to say that I'd be able to compete, but I don't know. You know, I could be maybe like, you know, with the Eagles, my second year, I was just kind of breaking into the starting lineup. I was kind of alternating with Charlie Homeboy Smith and coach from I was breaking in as the starter, and then I broke my foot the fourth game of the season. And you know, I never really kind of started getting back into it. I rebroke it, started in the playoffs against Minnesota. Rebroke it, you know, came back after surgery and I was going to start to play again. And that's when I went through that. I don't even remember what they called it, but they had to put me on procedural waivers and I was picked up by the Chargers. But, I don't know. I'd love to say, yeah, I'd be a superstar out there, but, you know, maybe I wouldn't make a team. I just really don't know.
What, going back to Penn State, what was it like to play for Joe Paterno?
Well, I loved it. I love Penn State. I loved my years at Penn State. Here again, we were pretty successful. You know, we got to play in 4 bowl games. I got to play in two college all-star games, the Hula Bowl and the Japan Bowl. And, you know, Joe was tough. The thing about when you're a freshman and you go up to Penn State, back when Joe Paterno was the coach, was, you know, you're scared of the head coach. You're scared of Joe, okay? Because, you know, everything you hear about and what you know about him. So, you go up running scared, which is probably a good thing, you know, so you're doing things right. You know, you learned a lot from him, learned a lot, be on time, you know, do your homework, be good to your parents. You know, there's a lot of stupid little things that you learn from him that as a 64-year-old guy now that I try to instill into my kids. And that's something that, you know, I learned my college years. So I'm a Joe Paterno fan. So
your time at Penn State, you talk about all the success during your stretch there. One of the classic games had to be that Sugar Bowl against Alabama for the national championship. That was a game that, you know, I worked up in State College for a couple of years, and you mentioned that game to people and their eye starts to twitch because of the frustration and the damage it did. It's a game you guys lost, I think, 14-7. It's the infamous goal line stand where Joe got conservative at the goal line and Alabama kept you out. What are your memories of that game? I know you scored the only touchdown.
Well, mine aren't memories. They're like every week. It's not that I'm depressed or anything from losing the game, because the next day after the game, Fusina and myself and Matt Barr flew to Hawaii for the Hula Bowl. So we forgot about it quick, but I'm the guy that caught the pass down at the 1-yard line on first down or whatever and got knocked out of bounds by the guy from Alabama. And then we went on 1-2-3 and didn't score. So I'm constantly hearing about that. You know, why didn't you get in? You know, people make fun of me, which it's all good, you know, it's cool. But you know, that's a game we probably should have won. We got too conservative. I mean, we should have scored a touchdown there and it tied the game. But it was a great football game. A lot of the Alabama fan players I went on to actually play with. A couple guys were in San Diego and I was out there and became fairly good friends with a bunch of the guys. So, you know, it was a great experience. Would have been awfully nice if we could have been said we were national champs, you know, because played for national championship, was on the Eagles Super Bowl team. You know, we lost that one. Would have been nice if a couple things would have turned around for me, though.
So after your college career, Eagles draft you fifth round in 79. What was the draft process like for you? I know the draft is obviously not anything like what it is now back in 1979.
Yeah, well, I was living with four guys in an apartment in State College, and we were just – it was a typical day. I was in class. I remember I was – we were seniors, so our classes were, you know, we're pretty much done with school. So I was in the gymnastics class, believe it or not, and I had twisted my ankle doing something stupid. So, but I came back. All I can remember is I came back from the class, you know, was icing my ankle, and I got a call from Carl Peterson's secretary, a girl named Debbie Antoneski. I think she was a cheerleader at Penn State the year before, so I kind of knew her. But she called me, you know, said, hey, you know, Eagles were drafting. And I got on the phone with, I think, Vermeil and Carl Peterson, just real quick, you know, and they drafted me. And so that was all pretty cool. You know, I had no idea where I, you know, like nowadays, you know, a lot of guys have a pretty good idea where they might go. You know, I was fourth to sixth round or something, you know. Going to the Eagles was awesome, you know, staying close to home. Knew there were a lot of Penn State people in that area. My family was, you know, from 2 hours away. So it was pretty cool. Yeah.
So when you get to training camp with the Eagles, first I'm curious, because I know Dick Vermeil was notorious during his Eagles years as head coach for really working you hard during training camp. What's that first NFL camp like?
Tough, especially with Dick Vermeil. We were at Chester, PA, and, you know, we worked our butts off. You know, we worked, I don't remember, 3 hours in the morning, 3 hours at night, in the afternoon, and we'd meet for 2 or 3 hours, I can remember, and it was, camp was tough, you know, and as a rookie, fifth rounder, you know, you don't know whether you're going to make it. So, you know, it's kind of stressful the whole time. And then you like you're saying, we talked earlier, you're jumping from high school or from high school to college. Now you're jumping from college to the pros, you know, you're going in the locker room and there's 35, 36 year old guys, you know, back then, you know, a couple guys smoking in the locker room, you know, stuff like that. So it was an eye opener, especially coming from Penn State where, you know, we pretty much did everything by the book. Rookie camp was a tough one. Absolutely.
You join a wide receiver corps that obviously is headlined by Harold Carmichael. What's it like playing with him and, you know, kind of watching him in that first camp?
I always knew of Harold Carmichael and, it was as a young receiver, of course, you know, he's what, 5'8". They're 6'8", you know, he was quite unique. So you couldn't really emulate him, but, Harold was always great. You know, he was a guy that really didn't have to pay a whole lot of attention. It could have been aloof to the younger guys, but my locker was beside Harold and he was always great. He would help wherever he could. I'd always bring him donuts. I mean, I still see him sometimes at a few golf tournaments and we talk about me bringing him donuts and stuff, but, Harold was fantastic. I mean, all pro Hall of Fame guy. He was, and I still see him every so, and he's still just the greatest guy. Yeah.
So when did you realize, you know, you mentioned fifth round, you don't know if you're going to make the team. Was there a moment when it was like, you're told you're going to make it, or does just nobody that first camp come and tell you to bring your playbook? Coach Vermeil wants to see it. Kind of how did you, you know, make the team, learn you made it?
Yeah. Back then, when you were cut, I recall they would come to your room with a pink slip back then like come to room 302 and hey, Kenny Johnson, you know, coach would like to see you take. Yeah. And I never got that. I remember we broke camp and he still didn't know, you know, we broke camp, whatever it was, the Saturday after our last preseason game, broke camp. And, I think I went home because I wasn't quite sure where, if I was going to stay there or I was done. I think I came back to Redline for the day or two and I never heard. So I went back to Monday and had made the team, but I don't recall getting a call saying, "Hey man, congratulations, you made it." I just never got the call that said, "Hey, you didn't make it."
So I'm curious, once it transitions to camp to preparing for week one of your rookie season, did it feel different?
Yes, it did. Once you made it, your confidence level just skyrockets 100%. You know, once, you know, and you're always on your toes as a young guy because, you know, they're bringing people in all the time. They're bringing guys in that were cut, the last cuts from other teams and, you know, just to work them out. And so, you know, you're always on your toes and you always got to get better. As a backup player, you know, we ran a lot of scout teams. So you had to excel on that. And that's where you became a really good football player, working really hard, you know, on scout work and things like that. So, but yeah, I think probably 3 or 4 weeks into it, I really started feeling comfortable thinking that, you know, I fit in, I can play, and they're going to give me an opportunity. I think probably 2, 3, 4 weeks into it is when you really start feeling more comfortable.
So we talked about Joe Paterno. What's it like to play for Dick Vermeil?
Here again, I was so fortunate. You'll go on the third coach I played with eventually, probably, but Coach Vermeil's fabulous. I mean, congratulations going into the Hall of Fame. And, you know, he was great. He was tough though. You know, nobody worked as hard as Coach Vermeil, and because he worked so hard, then his team had to work so hard. And, you know, I spent a little bit of time in San Diego and it was like two opposite ends. You know, we worked our tails off 3 hours on the field and during the season, 2.5, 3 hours meetings out on the West Coast. You know, you cut that in about a third. So, but I love Dick Vermeil. He was a great coach. He was a great human being, a great person. You know, we see him every so often again. I get to catch up with guys at some charity golf tournaments. And, you know, Dick's just fabulous. You know, he asks about you. He asks about your family. He's concerned about you. And, you know, it's all real.
So I think that your rookie year, you caught like 8 passes. And do you remember your first touchdown? I think it came like last game or second to last game.
Was it against Denver?
I think it was against the Oilers, against Houston.
Okay. I remember a little bit about Houston. I remember touchdowns against Denver because I got a picture of it. I think I still do. I remember a catch against Houston because I actually have a picture of that too. But it's hard to remember a lot about it. You know, I remember more about running across the middle in St. Louis and breaking my foot. And then I remember more about running an out route and catching the ball and breaking my foot against the Vikings. But I remember a Denver touchdown catch only because it was about a 50-60 yarder. And I did the exact same thing against the exact same guys when I was in San Diego with scored about a 50-60 yarder from Dan Fouts. So, you know, a lot of good memories about everything other than just, you know, on the field football stuff. Like a lot of guys say, the camaraderie in the locker room, you know, the friends you made, you know, even though you spent a little bit of time there, you know, some of those guys are still buddies of mine, you know, Spags, John Spagnuolo I live with. I spent a little time, this is a lot of Pittsburgh Steelers fans around here, and I spent a little time in training camp rooming with Bill Cowher. I think he was a free agent. I can't remember if he's a free agent with Eagles at the beginning. Then he got cut and went to Cleveland and, you know, with Schottenheimer and got all his coats and things. But so there's a lot of really great friendships that I had in those years that you still have.
So you mentioned you get hurt in 80. I'm curious, the one thing about the Vermeil years, there was just this slow build, every year better, every year another step. So when you're coming into the 80 season, did you feel like you guys had something really special?
Well, I really didn't know, quite honestly, because we had a pretty good year, 79. I knew we had the chance, you know, in football, you know, you lose a couple players, you know, things can drop. But I think personally, I knew that we had a chance to get to the Super Bowl. Who knows? You know, we always knew the Cowboys were pretty good. It's pretty good rivalry. The Redskins were pretty good. It's pretty good rivalry in our division. I think we knew that because we were going up the hill, we were going up the mountain. Now we always had a chance, but you know, things got to fall into place to make it to the Super Bowl. Injuries, a little bit of luck, but I know we had the personnel to do it.
The quarterback is Ron Jaworski. What's he like catching passes from?
Well, Jaws is great. I wish I would have caught a lot more, but, you know, it is what it is. But Jaws, you know, he was a great quarterback. He was a great leader, and, you know, he had a strong ball. And he was like Carmichael. You know, you came in, he was starting quarterback for the Eagles, you know. but he welcomed you. He welcomed you with open arms, and he would do anything he could to help you become a better player. And, you know, is another guy I see around a good bit. You know, Jaws is pretty active in the area. And so I get the opportunity to see him. He's always great to see him every so often.
You mentioned the injury. Yeah, I think it was week 4. You get hurt against the Cardinals, and you had scored touchdowns the first couple games of the season. You mentioned you're rotating in. You're becoming a big part of the offense. When you get hurt, do you realize right away that it's something pretty serious?
Well, I think I did because I broke that, and it's a pretty common injury in a lot of basketball, that fifth metatarsal in your foot. I think I had some stress fractures probably just from cutting, and I just cut on it and eventually popped on me. So, I knew it was an injury. I thought maybe just because it was a broken bone, I'd be 6 or 7 weeks and come back. But because of the bone, the thin bone that was on it, it's a little bit more serious sometimes to heal. And there's always potential to break it again unless you have surgery. And unfortunately, I came back and had a lot of really good opportunities again, kind of jumped right back in there and then re-broke it. So,
what was the rehab like the first time you heard it?
Well, the first time was just we stayed off it for a little while. I wore a boot, if I recall, and then, you know, after about 2 weeks, it was pretty normal. I couldn't run, but we did Ronnie O'Neill and Otho Davis. I don't know if you remember their names or not. Mm-hmm. Otho, of course, was, you know, Hall of Fame trainer, and Ronnie O'Neill was his assistant, who's a fantastic trainer too. And you know, I just did a lot of training with those guys. You know, we had all the old, whatever the old machines we had back then, you know, a lot of working out with the legs and weightlifting, and you know, eventually working my way back into running and cutting. And I came back. Did I come back for the play? I can't remember when I came back, maybe for the playoffs, but it was probably what, 8, 10 weeks. And it still wasn't completely healed.
Could you tell that? Like when you're running?
No, I didn't know. I had no idea because I was pretty excited. And I think maybe I wasn't running quite as fast. I think once I broke my foot, I might have lost a little bit of speed for some reason the second time also. You know, you always feel like you're back to 100%, but I don't think you are. I think anything time you get an injury or something like that, it takes a little bit longer than you think. You think you're at 100 and you're really at 80. So, but I was playing, you know, I actually started against the Vikings and, in the playoffs, and thought I was back to normal, but obviously I wasn't.
Yeah, that was the divisional game against the Vikings at the Vet, and
right. And then we went on and beat Dallas, I think, the next week.
Yeah. And so it was the exact same injury the second time?
Yeah, the same place. Yeah, exact same. Yeah, fifth metatarsal, back, exact same spot. Yeah.
So that game and this game kind of gets swallowed up by history because of so much focus, obviously, on Dallas and the Super Bowl.
Right.
But you guys, there was all this excitement, and Minnesota punched you guys in the mouth. It was 14-0, and things were looking bleak. Do you remember how that game turned around? Or obviously you get hurt, and that's the main focus.
I remember the beginning of it, how they were, just like you said, they were punching us in the mouth. all over the place, and it was bleak early on. And then I don't remember if I got hurt in the second quarter or whatever it was, fortunately we came back. I think I missed a lot of it because I was back in the locker room, probably came out near the end, but we were lucky. Yeah, we very, very well could have lost. I remember they were tough. They were tough. Of course, everybody's physical in the NFL, but they were a very physical team. I remember when I was out there playing. Yeah, they were coming after us.
The second time you hurt the foot, is it more difficult to deal with than the first time?
Well, this one was because then we beat Dallas. You know, we're in the playoffs.
Right.
We beat Dallas. We're going to the Super Bowl. And that was about the time I was looking at having surgery. So we put it off so I could go down to the Super Bowl and, you know, spend the Super Bowl with the team and everything. But second time, you know, you're thinking, gosh, is this going to continue to happen? What do I need to do now? You know, it's happened twice. I end up having to have surgery. The doctor for the Eagles back there then is a guy named Vince DiStefano. And we ended up taking bone out of my hip, bone graft, taking bone out of my hip and cutting out a little block in there and putting a good fresh bone in there. But yeah, I was always concerned that, it's just what's going to happen with this. Is it, you know, life threatening for my football career or what? But, you know, I came back. But like I said, I came back and I was never quite as fast as I was when earlier.
So the Super Bowl, you know, well, first of all, even from not playing, but what was the energy like for that Dallas game?
Oh, the energy for the Dallas game was nuts. There's no way we were going to lose that game. First of all, Philly, Dallas, I don't know how their rivals are now. But back then, it was crazy. It was crazy nuts. The city was crazy. You know, we were just emotional and ready to play. Coach Vermeil, you know, had us ready to play. And, you beat Dallas and you go to the Super Bowl. So you're killing two birds with one stone right there. You know, you're beating the Dallas Cowboys who, you know, they have more of a history of the playoffs and the Super Bowl than the Philadelphia Eagles. And there's no way we're going to lose that game. Wilbert Montgomery, remember Wilbert Montgomery had a great game. He just ran all over the Cowboys and it was pretty exciting. It was even standing on the sidelines watching. It was pretty fun.
That being said, I over the years you've heard people talk about leading up to the Super Bowl and that you could sense the guys were tight, and I think Coach Vermeil was still having pretty intense practices and maybe some fatigue. Could you notice that the vibe was off leading up to the Super Bowl against the Raiders?
Didn't really notice it till the game. And a lot of people talked about it. The Oakland Raiders were out till 5 in the morning. You know, they were the Oakland Raiders. You know, they were doing their thing. The Eagles were practicing for 3.5 hours, meeting in the morning. You know, we were doing the same routine that we did. I think for some reason, I think it was a 2 week in between games back then. And I think we might have spent a couple days in Tampa because it was cold up home. So we went to Tampa to train for, I don't know, a week or 5 days or 4 days or something. And so it was all out. And, you know, we might have been, you know, who am I to say? But come game time, we might have been worn out and they were their old, fresh, you know, crazy Oakland Raiders.
Time for a break on One-on-One. We will continue our conversation with former Eagles wide receiver Scott Fitzke right after this.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Come to DSW for the shoes, stay for the fun. Because, let's be honest, if shoe shopping isn't fun, are you even doing it right? So go ahead, try something new. Try something different. Good different. Try something that feels like you. You know, the real you. and then definitely brag about it later. Because at DSW, you've got unlimited freedom to play. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered. It's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here. Wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So that means a half day, yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Why does every recipe I try need 18 ingredients, including a jar of something paste I'll never use again, but will sit in my fridge for 9 months? I just want dinner in the oven, fast. That's why I love Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals. They send you fresh ingredients that are already chopped. All you do is put it all together and bake. That's it. No chopping, no weird leftovers, just delicious, easy-to-make meals. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
And we are back. Our guest this week is former Penn State Eagles and Philadelphia Stars wide receiver Scott Fitzke. How frustrating is it having to watch a Super Bowl and not be able to play?
Oh, it is. It's, you know, it's... That's probably, you know, one thing that I don't regret it, because there's nothing I can do about it. But, you know, I just, one thing in my life, you know, I've been very fortunate with, you know, things that in my life. And if there's something I regret, it's not being able to be in that game. Because, you know, I tell people, yeah, I was on the Super Bowl team. Yeah. But I didn't play. You know, I went in the game. I was on the team, you know, and I would have started that game, because Charlie Smith, he broke his jaw. I don't know if you remember. He broke his jaw maybe in the Dallas game. I can't remember. Or maybe even – but Charlie broke his jaw, so I would have been the main guy besides Harold. Ronnie Parker. I don't remember Ronnie Parker. Remember that name at all?
Caught the touchdown. They got called back.
Yeah, that would have been me. I don't know if I would have called touchdown. But, yeah, but Ronnie was the guy behind me even yet. So we were the four receivers, and Wally Henry was, but he never really played receiver. He was a return man. So anyway, yeah, that's something that, you know, I don't think about it much, you know, but it's something that would have been really cool if I would have been able to play.
So you mentioned the Chargers. You end up getting picked up by the Chargers after the procedural waiver situation. You spent a couple years in San Diego. You're going to another place with a great quarterback in Dan Fouts. What are your couple of years with the Chargers like?
It was a lot of fun. It's tough to break into a receiver lineup in San Diego. Back then, Charlie Joyner Hall of Famer, Wes Chandler Hall of Famer, Winslow Hall of Famer, you know, Dan Fouts Hall of Famer. But it was great in San Diego. You know, we didn't work as hard, which, you know, whether that's good or bad, I don't know. But you know, you move out to San Diego, caught on with some guys. John Cappelletti was on the team, who was, you know, obviously a Heisman guy at Penn State, and one or two other guys. And they kind of took me under their wing right off the bat. And, you know, just like it happened in Philly with some of the guys. But so San Diego was a blast. Playing on the team, just watching, because I basically played special teams. Got into a couple games. They didn't substitute much because they were scoring 55, but they were giving up 52.
Right.
so, but You know, it was really cool to be part of back when I was there. They were breaking all the passing records, you know, and right. I was part of the group. You know, I don't have a whole lot of yards and catches and everything, but I was part of that group. So it was pretty awesome time. Yeah.
So after a couple of years in San Diego, you end up back in Philadelphia with the Philadelphia Stars in the upstart USFL. Kind of what comes together? Is the USFL something that you heard about, wanted to pursue? Did somebody come to you? Kind of how did you get your foot in the door in the new league?
Well, I was actually a free agent. My contract had expired. So my options were, you know, renegotiating with San Diego. Or Carl Peterson, who drafted me with the Eagles, now was the president of the Stars. He had contacted me because I was a free agent. So, and the way the USFL was set up back then, there was like two or three teams that had to go, like colleges that had to go to, I don't know if you recall that, like this Philadelphia had North Carolina, Penn State, Temple. So, they were bringing in a bunch of Penn State guys. They brought in Fusina, who was my buddy and quarterback at Penn State. And, you know, I started doing this by myself, our season was out. I was a free agent. I would love to stay in San Diego and be, you know, I've been happy being a backup and playing special teams. But I didn't see myself really having a whole lot of opportunity to be a player. And you never knew out there because of their fast pace, you know, were they going to draft two receivers in the first round? You know, it was uncertain. It was uncertain. I love Corey Howe and everybody, but, so I talked to Carl, gave me a little bit more money, you know, and had the opportunity to come back home and hook back up with a lot of old college players and come back home. Even though, you know, it's pretty hard to leave San Diego. And that's pretty much how it worked. We negotiated some stuff. I was a little concerned with the league. We had some personal services contracts with Mr. Tannenbaum, who was the owner of the team, and just to make sure that I was going to get paid. And it all worked out really good.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. You know, yeah. it's a new league. It's, you know, even though there's a lot of big names, was there trepidation that, you know, oh boy, could I wake up, you know, in 2 months and read in the paper that the league's going belly up?
I think there was a little, but not really a lot, because once we went to training camp, we went down to training camp in DeLand, Florida, and I don't think we really thought about that a lot. I think my contract, the way it was written, kind of covered my butt in case something happened with the owner. It gave me a little more confidence to come back and do that I wasn't going to get screwed over. So, you know, once we got to training camp and, you know, it was all pretty professional, you know, it was first class. The Stars were a first class organization, as well run as any of them. And, you know, we went on and we had three really, really successful years. So it was here again. How lucky am I? Three more years in the USFL and three more years of playoffs, just every year in the NFL playoffs. So it was pretty lucky.
How's the USFL? Now you're playing for Jim Mora in the USFL, another legendary coach, but is it a different feel than the NFL?
I think it was a little bit different. You know, it was, you know, we had a lot of NFL guys come over, you know, the Generals had a lot of NFL, Birmingham, a lot of NFL, but I think it was just, well, first of all, we weren't getting 70,000 people to our games, you know, early on we drew pretty well. You know, maybe 40, 43, or, you know, it kind of dwindled. We played in the spring, which made it kind of feel a little bit different. You know, we weren't playing in football season that we played our whole lives. And, you know, it wasn't quite, you know, I don't care who says what. I don't see us competing in the NFL. You know, our team probably could have competed maybe with the lower teams. I don't know if we would have beaten them or not. Who knows? But, we could have competed, but it was, you know, it was a little bit of a lower league and we knew it, but you know, we were still getting paid to play football. So.
And you mentioned Chuck Fusina, your quarterback at Penn State, you guys really develop a rapport, and really for the first time as a pro, you're able to show what you can do. How much fun was that to just kind of be a consistent target at the professional level? Finally.
Well, that made it fun. You know, besides we won a lot. Like I said earlier, you know, when you win, it's a whole hell of a lot different than if you used. So that made it fun. And like I said, I was around a lot of buddies, and Chuck and I, you know, we were really good friends at Penn State, and stayed in touch when he spent a bunch of years with the Bucks and Tampa Bay and some other teams. But that made it fun, having an opportunity to go out and help the team win, being able to compete actually on the field and help our team win football games. That's why you play the game.
When it comes to like on the field memories from the USFL game memories, what are the first couple that will always stick with you?
Well, our first game, we went to Denver and played the Denver Gold, and it's snowing like a son of a gun. And I don't remember the exact story, but I remember us getting stuck in the snowstorm and we couldn't land. We had to land somewhere else, and that was like our first game, and it was just a nightmare. We're thinking, you know, it ended up working out. We ended up playing the game, but a huge snowstorm. I remember one of our playoff games, and when we were down, and you see it sometimes on some highlights, we were down like 41-17 at home at the Vet, and we came. It's a playoff. I don't know if it was George Allen's team. I can't remember who it was against. Might have been the Chicago Blitzers. We came back after being down 41-17 and won 44-41. And there's some pretty crazy games. And then, our championship game up at the Meadowlands against the Michigan Panthers, winning the championship. So there's a lot of great, great memories of that league. You know, we had a lot of really good players, and we had some great coach, majority of those coaches went on to coach in the NFL. So some of them still are, unfortunately some of them have passed away, but Jim Moore Jr. was a kid that used to hang around all the time. He was a kid that went to high school over in New Jersey, and look at him. He's doing pretty well. He's back at Connecticut coaching. So a lot of really great memories. Like I said, earlier in our talk, I've been extremely fortunate, especially in my football career. Yeah.
That's the thing. Like everywhere you went, you talked about high school, how successful you were. And obviously Penn State and those years with the Eagles, those years with the Chargers. Is there a point in your career where you kind of realize that winning at the level you're winning is not usual, that having this, being a part of all these teams that are so successful? Because I would imagine there's a part of you that you just get kind of so used to, you just expect this is how it is, but it's not.
Well, I think years and years after I got out is when, when you start reminiscing. When you're playing, you don't really think about it. It's part of it. But years after you get out, when you start talking to people and you get older and you start reminiscing and about those kind of things, and you're talking to people, and you're talking to kids that you're coaching, and you start to realize that that's pretty awesome. It wasn't an exceptionally long career, but every year I was part of that team that was top of the heap of whatever league we were in, and we got to play bowl games and championship games and Super Bowls and USFL championships. So it was every single year I played. So the older you get, the more you value that.
We need to take another break on One-on-One. We will have more with Scott Fitzke right after this. And we are back. Our guest on One-on-One this week, former Eagles wide receiver, Scott Fitzke. You mentioned you guys won the USFL title. You played for the title the first year. You won it the second year. And did you win it the third year in Baltimore?
Yeah, we won it.
And you won it in Baltimore too.
We won it when we were the Baltimore, when we would practice in Philly and played down at College Park. Yeah, we won it up in the, that's when we beat Michigan up in the Meadowlands.
What was, you mentioned that, cause I vaguely remember that the third year, like, was that crazy? You're working in the town you've been working, but you're playing somewhere else. Was that kind of a red flag to you that things might be going sideways?
It wasn't a red flag. It just what it was. It's how it had to be. We actually practiced. We didn't practice at the Vet anymore. We practiced over at Penn, over at University of Pennsylvania. So we did everything over there, and then we took buses, our home games, stayed in a Days Inn or something, stayed down there, and it was some crazy, you know, traveling. I think Saturdays we would drive down there, and the hardest thing was whenever the games were, Saturdays or Sundays or whenever they were, you'd have to get your home game, you had to drive 3 hours back home. And if you got hurt, or I remember getting a concussion one game and they ended up having to take me to the hospital. I went up to York, Pennsylvania, and ended up in the hospital with there, you know, so that was the only negative. I think all the traveling and everything, we just kind of took it for granted. That's what we had to do. And we didn't have any choice. So we did it, you know, and we persevered and had a pretty good year.
When did you learn that the league was going to be no more?
I think close to, you know, when it was coming down, you know, you hear it all kind of stuff as the lawsuit was going on. And so you heard negatives, positives. Oh, we're going to win it. You know, Baltimore's going to merge with the NFL, you know, that kind of stuff. But then, you know, when the verdict came out, it was kind of a joke. And we all kind of knew when the verdict came out, hey, we won. Yeah, but we won, you know, $3 or whatever. Right.
The antitrust lawsuit.
And, yeah. And the, you know, Trump was involved and you know, he kind of got that thing messed up for us. But anyway, I think back, and I don't even know when that was. Was that August? Or I can't remember when all that was. But I think right near lawsuit, all that kind of time, is we had an idea that, look, better start looking whether you want to go back into the NFL or do something else or just retire and see how it comes out. And
you guys had switched to the fall, right?
We were gonna, yeah.
Yeah, you were gonna.
Uh-huh, yeah. Yeah, and I think we had it. We got a new owner because I had dinner with him, and I moved to Baltimore. Myself and John McGuire, who was our film guy, who was at the Naval Academy for a long, long time and at Rutgers. But we moved to Baltimore, the two of us, to start promoting, you know, and I think the Stars were bought by Stephen, the guy who owns the Dolphins.
Ross?
Stephen Ross bought the Stars. Okay. I don't know if you ever knew that, because he came down, we all went to dinner one night and then it all went away and then it all folded. So I don't know how all that ended up, but I'm pretty sure Stephen Ross bought the Stars.
Who would you say, who were the top couple players for your money in the USFL?
Well, obviously Herschel, even though we shut Herschel down every time we played him. Kelvin Bryant was a heck of a player from our team. You know, unfortunately, he didn't have a great NFL career. I think he had some neck problems. We had Irv Eatman was a great linebacker, a lineman. Sammy Mills, you know, who's a Hall of Famer. The Generals had a bunch of guys come over from Kansas City, and I can't remember all the names. Steve Young was in it. You know, Steve Young was a great player, even in our league. Jim Kelly, you know, threw for millions of yards in our league. So, and a lot of really good, Jerry Holmes, who played for the Pittsburgh Maulers, was a really good player in the NFL. So there was, you know, 30% of the players, 30-40% of the players were NFL players, you know, and tons of our players went to the NFL and played afterwards. Bart Oates, center for the New York Giants, Sean Lendetta, you know, he punted for 6,000 years
right
in the NFL. And so yeah, there's Cliff. Remember Cliff Stout, went down to Birmingham, you know, he was a backup, the Steelers for a long time and played down in Birmingham. And, backup quarterback Dan Fouts went down to Jacksonville because he was never going to play because Dan Fouts was there. But yeah, so there's a lot of them. I mean, if it wasn't 45 years ago, I could probably remember more.
I'm curious because the Stars were such a well-run organization, but I've read books, watched shows, a lot of the other teams, there was a little bit of a fly-by-night feel. Did any friends in the league, did you have any stories from other people of kind of the, you know, better hurry up and get to the bank because only the first 20 checks are going to cash? Anything
well,
like that?
Well, we do have a couple stories, and I probably read the same books you did. So those stories stick in my mind about some of the teams like down south who, you know, they were very concerned about, you know, first of all, they didn't get their paychecks. Then when they would get them, first thing they would do when they would leave practice would, you know, everybody would hurry to the bank and put your check in the bank to make. But yeah, it sounded like there was quite a few teams that had happened to. I know San Antonio and you know, of course, some of the teams were Boston 1 year, then New Orleans 1 year. I think probably four or five of the teams had it together and the other teams didn't.
So after the USFL, well, first of all, like when it goes away, are you distressed or just, you know, because you go to the CFL next, were you just like, all right, what's the next opportunity?
Yeah, well, I didn't know what I wanted to do when I want to retire. Didn't know what I did. Had a bunch of concussions throughout all that time period. So a buddy of mine, Chuck and I, went up to Montreal. Buddy of mine from Baltimore was a Canadian. Okay, he was a TV guy. So he knew the GM in Montreal. And he said, why don't you guys go up there and look? So Chuck and I went up. And this was that or try to get in the NFL. And I didn't know what I wanted to do. I didn't know whether I'd even have a chance, quite honestly. You know, it would take a lot of work. So we went up, worked out. They offered us both contracts. Chuck came home. I stayed. Okay, so Montreal was great, but the football, I mean, the football was good, but we were bringing players in left and right and they were playing. I came in, signed a contract on a Wednesday and played Saturday,
right.
Sunday. I started, I think I had two touchdown catches, but you know, we brought a new quarterback from Alabama in and we were bringing new players in all the time and we weren't winning a whole lot. I only stayed a couple games. And it was a little unorganized. Montreal was, like I said before, great city, but that was it. Then I decided, you know, it's time for me to move on, after my experience up there.
And I'm just curious, cause the CFL, you're talking bigger end zones, bigger field. Was that difficult as a receiver to adjust to, or was it great? Cause you had more room to maneuver.
Well, it was kind of fun, because everything was much wider and the only thing I had to learn is cause I was playing on one of those inside, you know, whatever the slot positions. So you had to learn that going in motion thing all the time and not, you know, not going off sides. And like I said, I had no clue what I was doing. I think I called two touchdowns, like the first game. I think we lost to somebody like 42 to 21. And, you know, I was holding for the field goal kicker but yeah, it was fun. It was just a little disorganized. You know, half the guys from Canada were working in the morning, so we could only practice certain times. You know, we could only practice like 1 to 3 because some of the guys had to work. You know, it was a fun experience though, being up there for a little bit. It's fun that I gave it a shot.
And just, you know, you talk about, you know, deciding to hang it up. Were you always at peace with that decision? Did you, you know, was there like a year later, a couple years later, you start to get the itch, or once you were done, you were done?
Well, I think I knew, you know, a pretty good handle on it. I thought I knew I was done. Sometimes I think I wish I'd be playing now because there's a little bit more money involved. I pretty much knew, you know, this is it. I'm done playing. I got to figure out what I'm going to do for the rest of my life.
And how do you, when you kind of look at the, you know, the collection of your football career, you know, how do you kind of frame it? How do you look back on it?
My only regret is that I got injured. Okay. Because if I wouldn't have got injured, I was playing pretty well, and I don't really know how my career could have turned out. You know, I could have stayed, you know, of course, Dick left a couple, you know, 2 or 3 years after I left, but you know, things were really, really good. I was playing really well. Like I said, I was becoming a starter actually for an NFL team. And who knows, you know, I could have been a Danny Amendola or something. You know, I could have played for 10, 11 years. I don't know. I have no idea, but that's the only thing I regret. But it's, I regret it, but I don't regret it because I got hurt and that's how things are. You know, that's what happened. But besides that, you know, I got to be thankful. I got to be thankful given the opportunities that I had. I got to be thankful that I had the ability to have those opportunities.
Scott Fitzke, this was a ton of fun. Thanks so much for taking the time.
All righty. Thank you. Appreciate it.
That will do it for this week's episode. Many thanks to former Eagle Scott Fitzke for being our guest. Also, thanks to Steve Switkiewicz. He's a player marketing rep who helped facilitate the interview with Scott. And if you're looking to book a player appearance, Steve can be reached at 610-703-8479. Now, if you like One-on-One and you listen on Apple Podcasts, want to help us out, leave us a rating and a review. You can follow the show on Twitter at One-on-One Pod. You can follow me on Twitter as well at MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next time when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Ah, DSW, birthplace of the humble brag. Here, the shoes are so good, no one would ever know how little you paid. If you didn't go telling everyone, that is. And with never-ending options for every style, mood, and occasion, all at really great prices, we'll definitely give you something to brag about. So go ahead, stock up on fresh sneakers from your favorite brands. Or try those boots you always secretly knew you could pull off. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered. It's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. You know, one of the perks about having four kids that you know about is actually getting a direct line to the big man up north. Mm-hmm. And this year, he wants you to know the best gift that you can give someone is the gift of Mint Mobile's unlimited wireless for $15 a month. Now, you don't even need to wrap it. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
You open the fridge. There's nothing there. So what's it going to be? Greasy pizza? Sad drive-thru burgers? Dish by Blue Apron is for nights like that. These are the pre-made meals of your dreams. At least 20 grams of protein, no artificial flavors or colors, no chopping, no cleanup, no guilt. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
And we are back. Our guest on One-on-One this week, former Eagles wide receiver Scott Fitzke. You mentioned you guys won the USFL title. You played for the title the first year. You won it the second year. And did you win it the third year in Baltimore?
Yeah, we won it.
And you won it in Baltimore too.
We won it when we were the Baltimore, when we would practice in Philly and played down at College Park. Yeah, we won it up in the, that's when we beat Michigan up in the Meadowlands.
What was, you mentioned that, cause I vaguely remember that the third year, like, was that crazy? You're working in the town you've been working, but you're playing somewhere else. Was that kind of a red flag to you that things might be going kind of sideways?
It wasn't a red flag. It just what it was. You know, it's how it had to be. You know, we actually practiced. We didn't practice at the vet anymore. We practiced over at Penn, at University of Pennsylvania. So we did everything over there, and then we took buses, our home games, stayed in a day's in or something, stayed down there, and it was some crazy, you know, traveling. I think Saturdays we would drive down there, and the hardest thing was whenever the games were, Saturdays or Sundays or whenever they were, we would – you'd have to get your home game. You had to drive 3 hours back home. And if you got hurt, or I remember getting a concussion one game and they ended up having to take me to the hospital. I went up to York, Pennsylvania and ended up in the hospital with there, you know, so that was the only negative. I think all the traveling and everything, we just kind of took it for granted. That's what we had to do. And we didn't have any choice. So we did it, you know, and we persevered and had a pretty good year.
When did you learn that the league was going to be no more?
I think close to, you know, when it was coming down, you know, you hear it all kind of stuff as the lawsuit was going on. And so you heard negatives, positives. Ah, we're going to win it. You know, Baltimore's going to merge with the NFL, you know, that kind of stuff. But then, you know, when the verdict came out, it was kind of a joke and we all kind of knew. When the verdict came out, hey, we won. Yeah, but we won, you know, $3 or whatever. Right.
The antitrust lawsuit.
And, yeah, and the, you know, Trump was involved and you know, he kind of got that thing messed up for us. But anyway, I think back, and I don't even know when that was. Was that August? Or I can't remember when all that was. But I think right near lawsuit, all that kind of time is we had an idea that look, better start looking whether you want to go back into the NFL or do something else or just retire and see how it comes out. And
you guys had switched to the fall, right?
We were gonna, yeah.
Yeah. You were going to.
Yeah. And I think we had it. We got a new owner because I had dinner with him and I moved to Baltimore myself and John McGuire, who was our film guy who was at the Naval Academy for a long, long time and at Rutgers. But we moved to Baltimore, the two of us, to start promoting, you know, and I think the Stars were bought by Stephen, the guy who owns the Dolphins.
Ross?
Stephen Ross bought the Stars. Okay. I don't know if you ever knew that because he came down, we all went to dinner one night and then it all went away and then it all folded. So I don't know how all that ended up, but pretty sure Stephen Ross bought the Stars.
Who would you say, who were the top couple players for your money in the USFL?
Well, obviously Herschel, even though we shut Herschel down every time we played him, Kelvin Bryant was a heck of a player from our team. You know, unfortunately, he didn't have a great NFL career. I think he had some neck problems. We had Irv Eatman was a great linebacker, a lineman. Sammy Mills, you know, who's a Hall of Famer. The Generals had a bunch of guys come over from Kansas City, and I can't remember all the names. Steve Young was in it. You know, Steve Young was a great player, even in our league. Jim Kelly, you know, threw for millions of yards in our league. So, and a lot of really good, Jerry Holmes, who played for the Pittsburgh Maulers, was a really good player in the F. So there was, you know, there was 30% of the players, 40% of the players were NFL players, you know, and tons of our players went to the NFL and played afterwards. Bart Oates, center for the New York Giants, Sean Lendetta, you know, he punted for 6,000 years
right
in the NFL. And so, there, you know, there's Cliff. Remember Cliff Stout went down to Birmingham. You know, he was a backup the Steelers for a long time and played down in Birmingham. And Ed, backup quarterback Dan Fouts went down to Jacksonville because he was never going to play because Dan Fouts was there. But yeah, so there's a lot of them. I mean, if it wasn't 45 years ago, I could probably remember more.
I'm curious because the Stars were such a well-run organization, but I've read books, watched shows. A lot of the other teams, there was a little bit of a fly-by-night feel. Did any friends in the league, did you have any stories from other people of kind of the, you know, better hurry up and get to the bank because only the first 20 checks are going to cash? Anything
well,
like
well,
that?
Well, we do have a couple stories, and I probably read the same books you did. So those stories stick in my mind about some of the teams like down south who, you know, they were very concerned about, you know, first of all, they didn't get their paychecks in when they would get them. First thing they would do when they would leave practice would, you know, everybody would hurry to the bank and put your check in the bank to make. But yeah, it sounded like there was quite a few teams that had happened to. I know San Antonio and you know, of course, some of the teams were Boston 1 year, then New Orleans 1 year. And so, yeah, I think probably four or five of the teams had it together and the other teams didn't.
So after the USFL, well, first of all, like when it goes away, are you distressed or just, you know, because you go to the CFL next, were you just like, all right, what's the next opportunity?
Yeah, well, I didn't know what I wanted to do did I want to retire? Didn't know what I did. Had a bunch of concussions throughout all that time period. So a buddy of mine, Chuck and I, went up to Montreal. Buddy of mine from Baltimore was a Canadian. Okay, he was a TV guy. So he knew the GM in Montreal. And he said, why don't you guys go up there and look? So Chuck and I went up. And this was that or try to get in the NFL. And I didn't know what I wanted to do. I didn't know whether I even have a chance, quite honestly. You know, it would take a lot of work. So we went up, worked out. They offered us both contracts. Chuck came home. I stayed. Okay, so Montreal was great, but the football, I mean, the football was good, but we were bringing players in left and right, and they were playing. I came in, signed a contract on a Wednesday and played Saturday, right. Sunday. I started, I think I had two touchdown catches, but you know, we brought a quarterback from Alabama in, and we were bringing new players in all the time, and we weren't winning a whole lot. I only stayed a couple games, and it was a little unorganized. Montreal was, like I said before, great city. But that was it then. I decided, you know, it's time for me to move on after my experience up there.
And I'm just curious because the CFL, you're talking bigger end zones, bigger field. Was that difficult as a receiver to adjust to, or was it great because you had more room to maneuver?
Well, it was kind of fun because everything was much wider. And the only thing I had to learn is because I was playing on one of those inside, you know, whatever the slot positions. And so you had to learn that going in motion thing all the time and not, you know, not going off sides. And like I said, I had no clue what I was doing. I think I caught two touchdowns like the first game. I think we lost to somebody like 42 to 21. And, you know, I was holding for the field goal kicker but yeah, it was fun. It was just a little disorganized. You know, half the guys from Canada were working in the morning, so we could only practice certain times. You know, we could only practice like 1 to 3 because some of the guys had to work. You know, it was a fun experience though, being up there for a little bit. It's fun that I gave it a shot.
And just, you know, you talk about, you know, deciding to hang it up. Were you always at peace with that decision? Did you, you know, was there like a year later, a couple years later, you start to get the itch, or once you were done, you were done?
Well, I think I knew, you know, a pretty good handle on it. I thought I knew I was done. Sometimes I think I wish I'd be playing now because there's a little bit more money involved. I pretty much knew, you know, this is it. I'm done playing. I got to figure out what I'm going to do for the rest of my life.
And how do you, when you kind of look at the, you know, the collection of your football career, you know, how do you kind of frame it? How do you look back on it?
My only regret is that I got injured. Okay. Because if I wouldn't have got injured, I was playing pretty well, and I don't really know how my career could have turned out. You know, I could have stayed, you know, of course, Dick left a couple, you know, two or three years after I left. But, you know, things were really, really good. I was playing really well. Like I said, I was becoming a starter, actually, for an NFL team. And who knows? You know, I could have been Danny Amendola or something. You know, I could have played for 10, 11 years. I don't know. I have no idea, but that's the only thing I regret. But it's, I regret it, but I don't regret it because I got hurt and that's how things are. You know, that's what happened. But besides that, you know, I got to be thankful. I got to be thankful given the opportunities that I had. I got to be thankful that I had the ability to have those opportunities.
Scott Fitzke, this was a ton of fun. Thanks so much for taking the time.
All righty. Thank you. Appreciate it.
That will do it for this week's episode. Many thanks to former Eagle Scott Fitzke for being our guest. Also, thanks to Steve Switkowitz. He's a player marketing rep who helped facilitate the interview with Scott. And if you're looking to book a player appearance, Steve can be reached at 610-703-8479. Now, if you like One-on-One and you listen on Apple Podcasts, want to help us out, leave us a rating and a review. You can follow the show on Twitter at One-on-One Pod. You can follow me on Twitter as well at MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next time when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
So you want to start a business. You might think you need a team of people and fancy tech skills, but you don't. You just need GoDaddy Aero. I'm Walton Goggins, and as an actor, I'm an expert in looking like I know what I'm doing. GoDaddy Aero uses AI to create everything you need to grow a business. It'll make you a unique logo. It'll create a custom website. It'll write social posts for you and even set you up with a social media calendar. Get started at GoDaddy.com/Aero. That's GoDaddy.com/AIRO.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This holiday season, choose gifts that feel thoughtful and practical with Omaha Steaks. Whether you're hosting or gifting, they deliver the world's best steak experience, and it makes you look like you planned way ahead. They've got USDA-certified tender steaks, juicy burgers, comfort meals, and tons more. Gifting Omaha Steaks is honestly one of the easiest wins. Everything arrives beautifully packaged, super convenient, and the quality is unbelievable. Their filet mignons are some of the most tender I've ever had. And the variety means you can personalize every gift. Plus, orders placed by 6 p.m. Eastern ship same day. And everything is backed by their 100% guarantee. It's holiday gifting made simple. Save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their Sizzle All The Way sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code T-BONE at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com, code T-BONE.